You are listening to Training Matters with Honey Shelton. Training Matters is brought to you by the Training Institute, dedicated to setting the standard for individuals responsible for training effectiveness in banks and credit unions across the country.
Hi, I'm Chad Knudsen from SBS Cybersecurity out of Madison, South Dakota, and I head up our educational group here at SBS, and we do webinars and conferences around the country on cybersecurity and information security-related topics.
Welcome, Chad. I'm so excited to have you back again, and wow, perfect timing to be talking to you with all this discussion about what happened with Equifax. Can you give us an overview of what you know about the Equifax breach?
Yeah, the breach is likely, some people have speculated, but likely the worst data breach that we've had in our country to date. And what we know so far is just that information that we know, which could change at any moment. And with most breaches, what you know initially will change. But given that, we've seen about 143 million records breached, and these records include our consumer, you know, you as an individual, me as an individual, our consumer names, social security numbers, birth dates, addresses, and in some cases, driver's license numbers. I'm not sure what that means, if it's the majority of the 143 or a small subset. In addition to that, there's about 209,000 credit card numbers included in the breach and 182,000 consumer dispute documents that you would submit if you had a concern about something on your credit report and you wanted it cleared up.
Well, that is, you know, beyond belief. And of course, just like SBS, Interaction Training focuses heavily on the financial institution world. So confidentiality, privacy, all of those things matter greatly to banks and credit unions you and I work with. This information, you know, what type of value does all that data have to a cyber criminal? What are they going to do with this?
Well, this value, honey, is, I would consider it a premium type of value. This is data that it's not something you and I can easily change. My birth date is my birth date. My social security number is what it is. So it's value that exists for a long time, unlike a credit card, where if I'm concerned, I call in, reset it, we're good to go, get a new card. So in this case, it's good for a long time. And this is the type of information that you need to create a new line of credit or get a mortgage for a home. So there's a potential of a lot of credit card fraud, you know, loan fraud, other types of issues related to credit. But it is also a growing concern that this is, I mean, if it does include driver's license numbers, I mean, I could go down to the Social Security office and file for early retirement as someone else with my fake driver's license that I bought on the dark web. And I could start applying for Social Security so we could do Social Security fraud. There's the potential for, you know, Medicare, Medicaid-type fraud, tax return fraud. I could submit taxes on your behalf early, and I could inflate your income with a nice return, and they would send me the return instead of you. So there's plenty of avenues there. Everyone's really focused on the credit side, but I think it would be important for us to remember the other types of fraud. And in the worst cases, even very less likely, but worst cases, someone could assume your identity, commit crimes in your name, and the police show up at your door looking for the obvious criminal, but find you. And obviously that's a huge impact and a scary thought for us.
Well, Chad, what can you tell us about how this kind of thing actually happens without teaching us how to do it? One, how did Equifax get all the information? And two, how easy is it? I mean, could this happen to other credit bureaus and so forth? What do you think?
So I should probably touch on the other details of how this happened, and I think that would explain your question. The way that this information was divulged was a website that Equifax used to move information from consumers to the Bureau and back and forth. And it was a publicly available website. Anyone could see it on the internet. And there was a vulnerability in this website. And at first, they speculated if it was a brand new vulnerability we'd never seen before, or if it was one we've known about that we neglected to patch and fix. And just recently it came out that it very likely, according to Equifax, they didn't get it patched. The vulnerability was known way back in March, and it appears that mid-May the hackers gained access to this web server and have had access through May, June and July until they detected it July 29th. So if Equifax had have been more prudent in patching, maybe the compromise wouldn't have happened. The other thing then, they noticed July 29th and they publicly notified us September 7th. So there's a window of time there that they were investigating this and trying to figure out what happened. And this web vulnerability, just to simplify the whole thing, it was probably a pretty simple process for the cyber criminal to see the vulnerability. You can scan for it, and it would be very easy to use the vulnerability to get the data. So I'm imagining you left your house open. I just walk inside, grab the purse off the counter, and go out the front door again. It's not a real complicated process, not very advanced. And this is likely an issue that could happen to any bureau, could happen to any business, any financial institution. This vulnerability exists or had existed until it had been patched in most Fortune 100, if not Fortune 500 companies. So it's very likely other bureaus or businesses could be affected as well.
So this vulnerability issue and the patch, is that something a business has staff that is watching for that, checking for that? Is that something a company like SBS supplies, that process of staying on top of the need for a patch to take care of a vulnerability? What advice do you have around that, about how a business can protect their data?
That's an important question and lessons learned really from Equifax. All organizations are expected to patch their vulnerabilities. It's considered a fundamental principle of information security. It's no different than strong passwords. It's something we just need to do. And sometimes organizations find business reasons to delay patching. Whatever might have happened here with Equifax, it was a poor decision to either consciously delay the patching or to really have no idea that the patch was necessary in the first place. So that's something that SBS does help credit unions and banks figure out, is what's my strategy for patching? And, we don't provide those type of hardware software solutions for people, but we consult to figure out, would I patch towards the end of the week? Or how would I design my patching strategy so that I can get these patched as fast as possible without disrupting my business? I got to do loans today, and I can't have computers broken because we patched irresponsibly, but we also can't wait 2 months, as in the Equifax situation, and be a victim of a cybercrime. So there's a growing need for people to patch faster, because if Equifax's web server went down, it would have been an impact, but at a micro scale compared to the situation they're in now.
And Chad, you're the expert on this, so I'm not. Just elaborate a little bit about how would you know you need to do a patch?
Also a very good question, and that's part of what we build into a institution's patch management program, the process, is ways of monitoring for these things. So, this is a known system that they used. It was a product from Apache Struts. So it should have been included in a risk assessment, and it should have been a decision in that risk assessment that this system would be patched regularly. And then we would design a strategy for that, and we would monitor. So these companies put out alerts when new versions of their software come out. And in those alerts, they specify this alert solves critical security flaws. it should be applied timely. Microsoft does the same thing every month on Patch Tuesday, second Tuesday. They put out a notice of here's all the patches and here's how important they are. So there's multiple places we can look. There's third parties that aggregate these together. There's a government resource, US CERT, that puts out large announcements when it's a really significant update that the country needs to know about. It's just a matter of listening and finding the sources that are going to tell you when it needs to be applied. Sometimes the application of patches is automatic, like on your computer. It just does that. You set it to auto-apply them, and it happens for you. In this case, it's more of a manual process. You'll have to download the new software and apply it, but the information is made readily available to you if you're looking for it and paying attention to those updates.
Wow, that paints such a clear picture for a novice like myself to have that plan in place. And of course, in the financial institution world, it brings us back to that same old story of what's your policy, who owns the responsibility, what's the procedure, and so forth. So thanks for educating me with a little bit of Patch 101. Of course, you know, if you've turned on your TV or checked the web for the latest news around the world, it certainly sounds like Equifax has been criticized regarding the validation website and credit monitoring. Can you speak to that as well, Chad?
Absolutely. They have received a lot of criticism, and some would say this is a good set of examples of what not to do if it would ever happen to your institution. And some of the criticisms, I would say, are a little public bias. I mean, we're always upset about how fast organizations notify us. And that's one of the big criticisms. It took them about 40 days to make a public notification. And that's way too long if there are no contributing factors. Now, the government could request they not notify us because they're investigating who hacked them. This could be part of a nation state attack from Russia, China, North Korea, and they want time to investigate before the news hits. In other cases, it's just, you know, not being organized and not putting the consumer first, which they should have criticism for. So there's things we don't know, mm-hmm. other than it took them 40 days to tell me that I might have already been pursued by cyber criminals with identity theft. When this happened, they put up a website that you could go to. The website looked very suspicious as far as you would normally go to Equifax.com to go to the website, but it's EquifaxSecurity2017.com. It looks like a phishing site. And if you were to dig into it like security people would, you'd find out that it was never even registered or owned by Equifax. Some third party put this website up. So it made it even more suspicious that it was a phishing type web page. But it was a legitimate one put up by Equifax. And when you went to this site, the first thing that they ask you to do is check to see if you're affected, which is very motivating for you and I to do because I want to know if I'm one of the 143 million people or not. And to do that, I put in my last name and the last six digits of my social security number, which if they just had a massive data breach makes me rather uncomfortable that I'm giving them my sensitive data, because if I wasn't affected, now they have it. Are they going to take care of it this time? Also, when you checked if you were affected or not, the terms and conditions on the web page initially waived your right to litigate against Equifax in any of these multiple class action lawsuits that are coming out. So they have since clarified that that isn't the intention of the terms and conditions, so it shouldn't apply here. When you check if you're affected or not, it'll tell you they don't believe you're affected or it's possible that you are. Brian Krebs is a great research journalist. If you're interested in cybersecurity, he's a great one to follow. He did a great analysis on this website, and he believes that the website is just providing false information. He would do it on his phone, and it would say he's affected. He would do it on his desktop, and it would say he's not affected. He'd come back a couple hours later, and it'd give him a different answer. And again, they say they've fixed that, but I would be careful putting my faith in it saying you're not affected. I would assume you are affected, given 143 million Americans who have credit were hacked. That's probably the majority of us. A couple other things. They're offering you a free year of Trust ID, which is their credit monitoring solution. And it was initially believed that you would automatically be enrolled for the paid for version, because it's the product they sell, if you sign up for the free version. But they're clarifying you won't automatically have to pay for continuing coverages after the first year, which 1 year of identity theft coverage is really not sufficient for this problem, since this data is valid forever. It could be used 3, 4, 5, 10 years from now for identity theft purposes. It's such a small amount of coverage. And then obviously the class action lawsuits, some of them are relatively large. There's one lawsuit filed for $70 billion, and there's 23 of them out there, plus some new ones coming out. So there's likely to be plenty of legal action after all of these mishaps that have been reported.
Chad, great overview. It sounds like Equifax certainly didn't have a plan in place for the worst that could happen. And it sounds like the worst did. So what advice would you give me as a consumer? How should I respond to this, and what should I do? Having refinanced or bought a house 2 years ago, I mean, I'm pretty confident I'm part of that. So what should I do to protect myself as best I can?
I think your first statement there was very good. You just assume that you're part of the breach. That way we're paying attention, we're on alert. Nothing to be alarmed about. I mean, I wouldn't lose sleep and panic over, but take necessary precautions and steps. So checking yourself with their website, that's up to you if you feel that's necessary or not. If you're assuming you're a victim, then it wouldn't really matter. They are offering that free year of coverage. I don't think there's much harm in signing up for it, because I assume they already have my data, so I'm not sure I'm adding to the problem. And I'm getting at least a free year of monitoring. I don't know the quality of it because it's a product they offer, and they've had some challenges themselves. So those are the fundamental places to start, is take them up on the free year of monitoring. I personally would recommend signing up for a second type of monitoring solution. There's free ones out there like Credit Karma. A lot of financial institutions offer LifeLock as a service. So, you know, turn to your own institution and ask them if they have a product, because I would trust them to provide me some monitoring to look for new types of credit being established on my account. So I think that that's a very cost-effective way of keeping an eye on my credit. Also, as a standard practice, pull your credit report now, and then every year that you can pull it, you get a free one every year. I would pull your credit report, make sure everything looks good now, so you got a nice clear baseline as of today. All this credit that I'm seeing on these three bureaus belong to me. The other couple options are, I would really encourage people to go for the credit freeze. There's a alert process and a freeze process. The alert is a shorter term. It doesn't last forever. Some expire after 90 days. They're all a little different. And they'll alert you of anything going on with your credit. And then if you're getting a house, the borrower, the bank pulling the credit is going to get an alert as well. And that should scare a lot of borrowers away if it's a little shady of a situation already. So they might contact you, honey, and say, hey, somebody's trying to get a mortgage in your name. Is this legit? And if it is, you'd say yes. If not, then obviously the process would work. But it's detective. It requires these solutions to identify something's happening and then take an action. The credit freeze or security freeze is really the only solution that's more preventative, that would just lock it down so nothing can be added. And you would have to contact each of the credit bureaus to apply the freeze independently. So then if somebody tried to apply for credit, the bureau won't give your information out at all. So then the applicant would say, well, I can't pull your credit, honey. I don't even know if you're good or bad or anything, so I can't borrow. It's the most preventative measure. The downside of this is if you go to Target or to Kohl's and you want to open up one of those in-store credit cards right there at the checkout line, they're not going to be able to pull your credit. You're probably not going to get a card. Or if you go buy a car or any type of credit, you're going to have to thaw it first and contact the bureau's place would use and thaw your credit so they can pull it temporarily and then refreeze it. Otherwise, you know, it will disrupt your life. So there's a consequence to that, and there's a cost to that. The credit bureaus charge a small fee to apply that. probably a total of $60 amongst them to apply credit freezes. Equifax is waiving their fee for a short period of time, but that's the process I'm going through. I was just able to get Equifax's site to work the other day, so I've got my freeze there, and then I'm going to go to the other bureaus and apply it as well.
Well, this information's so valuable, so timely. Chad, do you think it would be advisable or something that a credit union or a bank should consider to offer workshops or seminars or what to do if you think you're a victim of this? Would that be a good opportunity for a bank or a credit union to reach out to their customer base? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's an increasing trend that we're seeing amongst institutions, and I really like what's happening. Those opportunities are really, you're like a trusted advisor. Your members or customers turn to you to really know what's happening, and they trust in the relationship. So here's an opportunity for you to help them be aware and maybe even guide them in some of the better decisions. Like, you know, I know Equifax is offering a free year of coverage, but why don't you consider the product that we have or one of these free products that are out there as an additional layer? I think there's a great opportunity to say, here's what's happened out there in the market. We wanted to let you know about it. It wasn't a breach of our institution, but here's some best practices that we would suggest. And I think that builds good rapport with your customers. From the regulators that I've talked to, they're not requiring you to notify. I would ask them, always ask your own regulator, because each one has a different opinion. But you're not being required to notify the customer. It is suspected that Equifax will eventually do that. I would also notify my regulator as an institution and say, we do use Equifax to report credit. And if you don't, then there's no need to notify them. But if you are supplying customer information to Equifax, I would make them aware of that. They may not want to know. The OCC, as an example, did want to know. The FDIC was kind of like, please don't overwhelm us with letters. But I think there's an opportunity to cover your bases, notify your regulator, and help your customers and your members.
Well, again, Chad, great information. And I know that SBS does the Hacker Hour. How often do you do that? And are those available after you do them? Or are they only available when you do them live? Tell us a little bit about the Hacker Hour as we wrap up.
The Hacker Hour is something that we do every month. And there's a different topic every month. We have the next one coming up on September 27th on vendor management, which is fairly timely with this situation. If you're reporting information to a credit bureau, maybe they should be part of our vendor management program. Maybe we should be asking them if they have good security before we pick them as a bureau that we want to report to. We do those monthly. They're a free thing that we provide people, so you can find information on our website, sbscyber.com, and you can enroll in the upcoming one. We do record those, and if you want to watch any of the past ones, you're welcome to. You have to request a password so you can log in to view those. But we just did one on Equifax the September 15th date, and you're welcome to go view those recorded ones. And that was kind of a special one. We usually only do one a month. This is kind of a double month with all the activity on Equifax.
Well, Chad, thanks for being our guest again. We know we'll have you back because I so respect your knowledge and your devotion to the marketplace, especially to financial institutions, since that's the crowd that'll be listening and follows Training Matters. It's always a pleasure to get a chance to hear what you have to say about cybersecurity, about managing risks. So thank you for being our guest, and I'd love to have you back again sometime soon.
Well, thank you, honey, and I appreciate the opportunity to share a little information.
You've been listening to Training Matters with Honey Shelton.